I am always grateful to be able to come back and share what God has been doing. I do apologize that I'm here without my family. I know I've already gotten it tonight. Oh, great to see you, but where's the others? So, everyone's doing well, though. We left Senegal in November, and God is transitioning us. We've been in Iowa since November, and we've been doing well. I would have much preferred a location further south that was warmer, but anyway, we've been in Iowa. Kids are doing great. Our daughter Adelaide, she's in the fourth grade now, and she's been adjusting well. It's funny to some of the things she has to adjust to. It's the first time in an English-speaking school, so she showed up at school. Of course, she's fluent in English, but whenever they did the Pledge of Allegiance, she had no idea what that was, and we hadn't thought to prep her on that in advance, so it's been a challenge for her. Our son Mark, he's five. He's in kindergarten, and he's doing great. He's adjusting just fine. I've already taught him a lot of basketball terminology, and now he refers to the time between the first and second service at church on Sunday morning as halftime. And so he's doing just fine. We're just very thankful for all that God has done in our lives. And so tonight I do want to share about our time in Senegal as well as what we're doing next. I've already mentioned that we felt God called us to Senegal, and then last year we felt that He was calling us away from Senegal. And so we want to share about our 5 years that we were there in Senegal, and also about what God is calling us to next. And I want to, before I share about what God did during our time in Senegal, I want to share just a few verses to give some context for what is it we were doing. Right? Whenever we hear missionaries, it's not just about hearing people that have interesting stories from other places in the world. We're doing something that God has commanded us to do. And so what is that? We see different verses in the Bible talking about the need to go to all nations. We see the vision set before us of people from every tribe and every tongue praising the Lamb of God, praising our Savior. We see Paul and his desire to go wherever there's no foundation. Paul's saying, you know what, even if it's just a small group of believers, that's great. You guys keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to go on. I want to go somewhere where there is no foundation. And those were some verses that pushed Hillary and myself to think about what is it that God could have for us overseas. And whenever we left to go to Senegal, we left with a question of, well, okay, how do we do this? And for the longest time, whenever we thought about missions or missionaries, it was always the idea of missionaries from the West going to the rest, often missionaries from the United States going to other countries. In the 20th century, a lot changed. We had sent missionaries to these other countries, and lo and behold, the church grew. And so the church is strong in Africa. The church is strong in South America. And so things changed from sending missionaries to unreached peoples, to now they were sending missionaries. In Senegal, we worked with several missionaries from South America, other missionaries from different parts of Africa, from Korea, from South Korea, missionaries from all over. And so one of the things that really motivated us in Senegal, our vision was we wanted to go to Senegal where the church already existed. There were already evangelists who had gone before us and had seen people come to Christ. And so we wanted to go there realizing that Senegal is a Muslim country, 94% Muslim, but there was religious freedom. And so we had the opportunity to go and not be the evangelist ourselves, but equip the church, build up the church in Senegal so that the church in Senegal can then send their own missionaries, whether it be to other people groups in Senegal or even beyond. There are about 30 different unreached people groups within just the country of Senegal. And so that was one of the things that drove us there. And then also our desire to see God's church defending the helpless and weak. And that I'll share a little bit about that with Hillary's ministry with street kids. So that was our vision. That's why we set out to go to Senegal. And it was interesting whenever we at many points along the road during our 5 years there, we had the impression, okay, God, what are you doing? It doesn't seem like things are moving. There's this frustration. We're looking at this situation. It doesn't seem like this is moving along. And yet when we got to the end and we were able to look back over the 5 years, we could see a lot of things that God had done during our time there, and it was very encouraging. And I'll give you a quick picture there. That lets you know where Senegal is. The tip there, that's where the capital, Dakar, is. And we were about an hour and a half inland. So about 50 miles inland is where we live. And when we went to Senegal, the main thing that I anticipated doing was teaching. That was what I had hoped to do with most of my time, and I was very encouraged that I had several opportunities to do that. At church, the church we attended, every 2 to 3 months, I would be able to preach there. At the Bible College, that's the ITES, is the Institute Theology Evangelical Senegal. It sounds funny when you just pronounce it from French to English, but that's the school where I taught, and I was encouraged to be able to teach there. In fact, it was always great to see students that wanted to learn. And I remember one encouraging story was after I had taught a church history class. About 2 months afterwards, I was at a meeting that had several different churches, different church leaders at that meeting. And one of my students came up to me and said, "Wayne, I want to thank you for what you shared with us, and particularly how you were able to show that church history was practical for what we were doing in ministry. We have been doing a Sunday school class, and we've been sharing a lot of the things that you taught us in church history." That was very encouraging for me to hear. I was also encouraged when one of my classes ended. I had evaluations, asked, okay, what was good? What is it that you appreciated? What could be improved upon? And one of the things that they appreciated about me, one of the students said, "Whenever we ask you a question and you don't know the answer, you say, 'I don't know.'" So they were very impressed with my ignorance, apparently. but it was helpful for me to realize that even the idea of modeling and you know what, it's okay to not know certain things and to let that be known. And I had multiple occasions to do that. But that was encouraging to be able to do that, to be able to teach. However, as I think I shared the last time I was here, the teaching opportunities were not quite what I had anticipated as far as the frequency of them. I was greatly encouraged every chance that I did have to teach. However, when I got to Senegal, I remember my plan was, I'm going to teach at a Bible college. We have a bachelor level program, and that's what I'm going to be doing. Spring semester, fall semester, I'm going to be teaching, have students in the classroom. And when I got there in 2010, the school had moved from the capital, from Dakar, out to where we were in Thiès, which is the second biggest city in Senegal. But there were not that many churches near where we were. And I remember in my first class having 3 students in it. And in fact, there were only 4 students in the entire student body. And that first year, to be honest, I wasn't asking too many pressing questions because Hillary gave birth that first year and we were just trying to figure out how to do life whenever the power's going out all the time. And so we weren't asking these really deep questions at that point. But at some point, we realized we're investing a lot of time, a lot of financial resources, human resources, and it seems like we're really teaching an extremely small group of people. And at some point, a group of us got together and said, "You know, we got to nip this in the bud. We got to, as Barney Fife would say, do something about this." And so, a lot of my time, while I had anticipated it being in the classroom, a lot of my time was outside of the classroom. And so for 3 years, I was able to serve on the board of the Bible College. And we had a great group. There was 5 of us who served on the board. And over the course of 3 years, we saw some major changes happen with the Bible College. And to give you an example, one, you can see the picture. It's hard to see on the left there. That was the entire student body for the program I went to teach in when I got there in 2010. Four students. And then you can see the other picture where the classroom is full. I had 15 students in my class last August. And one of the things that we had done was we looked at we're teaching classes to where students need to quit their jobs and move and live on our campus for 3 years. It just didn't happen. There weren't that many people that could afford to quit their jobs and move to our campus for 3 years. We looked at that and said, you know, one really simple change we can make is instead of offering classes year-round, let's offer intensive classes. Come for 1 or 2 weeks at a time. And that's a shift we made. And now we've got about 12 or 13 students that are enrolled for the degree program. But in addition to that, since it's just 1 or 2 weeks at a time, there are a number of church leaders who aren't really interested in the degree, but they want to learn. And since they can, it's only 1 or 2 weeks at a time, they can now come. And so that's why we will have students that have got 15, or classes with 15 students. And yes, I did cherry pick here. 15 was the biggest class that we had. We occasionally do still have really small classes. But overall, we're reaching more people. We're seeing our efforts go deeper into what we're doing with the church. That's just one of the changes that we were able to see. A couple other changes that we were able to see. In addition to that program that I went to teach at, we had a different program that was mainly designed at a lot of the church leaders in rural areas. So this was a program that we didn't require a high school diploma. A lot of these guys didn't speak French. And so this training we would translate into Serer was the main language that we would translate it into. And that was a great program. And over 10 years, we saw about 120 different people get trained in this program. Very encouraging. However, 2011, 2012, a few of us looked around and said, okay, these are the main churches that we're reaching here. How many church leaders have we not trained? And we're looking at that and realizing we've trained just about everybody that's out there. And in another year or two, we're not going to have any students for this program either. And yet, when we talked to those different church leaders, all of those guys were saying the same thing. They said, that training you gave us was great, but it was only 6 weeks. We could really use a lot more. And you think about if you're one of the few leaders in your church that can preach, you don't have commentaries, you don't have your favorite podcast, you didn't grow up in church. Think of all the advantages that we have in leading a church. And these guys, they're hungry for more. And so we looked at that on the board and said, we need to change things up. And so one of the things we did was there's a solid group of about 10 guys that are developing a second level to this program. And you might be wondering, if I was looking for teaching opportunities, why didn't I step into here? In one sense, I wish I could have stepped in, but a great problem that we had was we already had students that we had trained that wanted to teach at this level. We had about 10 guys, and most of them were either Senegalese or African. And we thought, you know what? We don't want a church in Senegal that's just sitting around waiting for a missionary from another country to teach. We want them to be able to do it themselves, and they were willing to. And so that's a great change that's happening. We also noticed we didn't have anything for church planting, and that's a change that we've made. We're slowly this year beginning a program that's going to be just a few weeks out of the year, and the goal is we want to be able to train guys who don't have to quit their jobs, who can keep their jobs, stay self-funded, and plant churches. That's something we started. And another thing, whenever I got on the board, 2012, one of the requirements for the board was you have to have three Senegalese guys. Yet three individuals who are Senegalese must serve on the board. The goal from the beginning is we don't want this to be an American school. We don't want it to be a European school. We want it to be Senegalese. Well, to get those three Senegalese individuals to serve on the board was like pulling teeth. And I sympathize with everyone's situation because every Senegalese elder that I knew worked the equivalent of like two jobs, and then he was an elder on top of that. So I understand why nobody wanted to do it, but it was always discouraging that we, us missionaries, we were often pushing things, and nobody from the Senegalese churches was saying, yeah, I would like to be on the board. I would like to be a part of shaping what the school looks like. And we saw that as a problem, and so when we redesigned everything, one of the things we did was we went and interviewed every church. We went and asked, what do you think we should be doing? We invited churches to be a part of the process, to be a part of shaping what the school would look like. And so last year, whenever we adopted changes, we had a one-day conference, and almost all of the church leaders that I knew from churches in Dakar, different places, they all came. They wanted to be a part of it. When we elected a new board last year, we only had to have three Senegalese church leaders. We had five. It was getting to the point to where we had too many people wanting to be a part of it, and we had to tell some people, no, we've already got enough. That was an exciting thing for me to see the church in Senegal look at the school as before something that was, okay, that's something the missionaries run. And then after we had done the process, it was, hey, listen, this is our school. Why don't we work and be a part of changing it? And that was very encouraging for me to see that. And this was one of the things that I was glad to see God bring this opportunity in my life. However, last year, my term on the board was up in October. And so that was one of the, I'll get to the question of why we left Senegal. One of the big reasons is a lot of the things that I was involved with kind of went away. And this was one of those opportunities. Another area, I was able to serve as the team leader for Senegal in, I think it was 2014. I actually literally started on April Fool's Day as team leader. I don't know if the previous team leader chose that on purpose, but I was able to serve in that role for a year and a half. Grew a team, great team of about 35 missionaries, and a lot of my job was us coming together with our strategy and then working with Senegalese churches. And so for me, a lot of what I did was lead discussions. If you can imagine discussions with about 30 missionaries in a room, there's an opinionated person or two amongst the group. And so that was a lot of what I did, was manage the chaos. And in addition to that, another area where I spent a lot of time was strategic planning, like in what I did on the board. But this was with our team. For years, a number of World Venture missionaries had worked where there wasn't much of a church in Senegal, and the church was really young. A couple years ago, we looked up and realized, though, that we partner with about 20 different churches, and all of these churches are completely governed by Senegalese. There are no missionaries that are have their hand in the church governance aspect of it. And we realized we need to change how we do things. And we need to take a step back. We realized that at times we would have a great idea and we would say, this is a great young man, he's got a lot of promise, let's give him a scholarship. And we would just do it, and we wouldn't talk to the elders of his church. We would just ignore the authority structures that were already in place. And we realized we need to change how we operate. And so a lot of what I did as well for 3 years there was serving on our National Church Relations Committee. And a lot of it was saying, okay, we've been doing things this way for about 30 years. And in one sense, it worked okay, because everyone on our team was very gifted. Everyone was a person of character. But we had never really sat down and thought, you know what, the church has changed, the situation's changed, we need to change. And so we did that. We sat down and we made changes to what we were doing, and we were able to get the whole team on board with changes, looking at how we do ministry, looking at how we fund projects without creating dependency. And that, for me, that was a great opportunity to be able to serve on that committee and be a part of shaping the strategy for our team in Senegal. For Hillary, her work, she worked with street kids. And in Senegal, I mentioned at the beginning that there's religious freedom in Senegal. That is with the exception of street kids. In Senegal, you have Muslim schools that will be in some of the bigger cities, and the teachers will bring kids in from villages to give them a religious education. The reality is that some schools do it. There are some schools that genuinely do give an education, but probably most, the teachers don't teach anything. They send the boys to go beg for money from early in the morning until late in the evening. And a lot of these boys, if they don't bring back enough money, they're beaten. They're physically abused. It's a horrible system. And Hillary was able to be a part of, it was some South American ministries that opened up this home. And there were boys who had run away from those schools, and they were living on the streets. And so Hillary worked with this couple who would go find these boys on the streets and put them in a home. And put them in this home. And every one of the boys that came through this, over the course of about 3 to 4 years, I would say there was maybe 20 to 30 different boys that went through this house. And they all heard the gospel. They all saw the love of Christ. They were taught how to read, how to write. Hillary, actually, she was the French phonetics teacher. So that was, if you remember the scene from The Pink Panther, I would like to buy a hamburger. That Hillary went through that quite a bit. And so that was a great work. And it was sometimes painful. I know two of the boys in this picture did not want to live in the house. And they wound up running away and just living on the streets. Two of the boys were able to get enrolled in a Christian school in our city, which was amazing that 3 years earlier, they were just living on the streets. And they were able to get enrolled in one of the better schools in our city. And we also saw maybe four or five different boys that were able to be reunited with their families. That was a great ministry. However, that too, the government began putting a lot of restrictions and regulations on this. A lot of the Muslim leaders, they get money from the street kid system, and so they don't like Christians working in that area. And so that ministry, the couple that was leading it, took a different direction. And so last year, Hillary's involvement in this ministry kind of went away. And so when you get to the question of why did you leave, because when we look back, we saw God do some great things. The reality is we were involved in influential ministry, but a lot of those opportunities went away. My job as team leader was only intended to be a year and a half. My job on the board ended last October. Hillary's job with the kids ended last year. And we looked at all of that, and it was a question of stewardship. We looked at, are we using our gifts here? We've used our gifts up until this point, but what should we do next? And we felt strongly that God was leading us to look to the next step. And so in November, we left Senegal with a whole lot of questions and very few answers. We did not know where God was leading us, and we knew God was faithful to us during our time in Senegal, but we did not know what was next. And so we left, and we went with the question of, how did God use us in Senegal, and is there a way to build off of that? Now, we knew that God was going to use our past experience, but we didn't know how. And so we were looking at, okay, for Hillary, she worked with kids in difficult situations. For me, it was teaching and then also in strategic planning were the two areas where I worked and saw God use my gifts. And so we were looking for opportunities in those areas for both of us. And for Hillary's work with kids, she is going to be involved in Memphis Teacher Residency. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of a guy named Josh Shelley. He has done this program. So we will be moving to Memphis in about a year, a month and a half, not a year and a half. Hillary will start that program in June. We were able to go in December and visit with Josh and Danielle, talk to Josh about his experience in that program. And Hillary is very excited to be able to do that program. And if you're not familiar with it, she'll do a one-year master's in urban education. And if you teach for 3 years after that, you owe nothing for the degree. And so that's what Hillary's going to be doing. And we were very impressed with the work that they're doing and the ways in which they've been able to put so many Christians in public schools that have a heart to show the love of Christ. We were very encouraged with what is going on in that ministry. And so Hillary's going to be involved in that. For myself, I'm going to stay involved with World Venture and continue using the gifts of strategic planning. In the beginning, I mentioned that, you know, in the past, we sent missionaries from the West to the rest of the world. And that shifted in the 20th century because the church grew in other parts of the world. And so we looked at, what do we do then? Well, then we can be a part of equipping people in other countries. Well, there are even more changes now. Now, what does it mean to reach unreached people groups? I don't know if you can see that arrow. When we talk about we want to reach people that have never heard the gospel, people from unreached people groups, a lot of those people are coming this way now. They're coming to us. I think I recently saw a statistic about 3% of the global population lives in a country different from the one in which they were born. People are moving all over. And so if we're saying we want to reach Wolof people in Senegal, they are definitely an unreached people group. I think there are maybe 100 or 200 believers that I know of. Very small Christian population. But there's 20, 30,000 in New York, several in Paris. And so for World Venture, our mission has typically not thought of the diaspora part of the people group. Whenever we think about a people group, there's always the people who live in the homeland, and then there's people who have left the homeland, and they're scattered throughout. That's the diaspora. And one of the things I'm going to be involved in is working with World Venture. This is from the World Venture website, interview with the vice president of World Venture. It's only been in the last couple of years that we've begun to think through, how does this change the way that we do ministry? And to be honest, World Venture is very early on in this process. There's already one individual who, for the last couple of years, has been trying to think through, how do we develop a strategy to do this? And he has asked me to join him and be a part of helping him developing the strategy. And in many ways, I view this as similar to what we did with our team in Senegal. With our team in Senegal, we got to the point to where we said, okay, we've been doing ministry this way for about 30 or 40 years, but the situation's changed. So we need to change. And so we developed a different strategy and got everyone to buy into that. The same thing's happening at World Venture. The organization as a whole is trying to look at, we're sending missionaries all over the world, and yet we're reaching people groups that are scattered everywhere. How do we do that? One of the things I'm going to be doing is working with another individual at World Venture to think through, how can we make changes within World Venture to adapt our strategy? And in particular, I'm going to look at a lot at the West African diaspora. So that's one thing I will be involved in. I'm also planning on being involved in outreach to Muslims in Memphis. I've been told there's about 3,000 West Africans that live in Memphis. You can see the different mosques that are in Memphis. I was even told there are two of those mosques that have Senegalese imams. And so we're looking forward to seeing how we can partner with churches in the Memphis area to reach Muslims with the gospel. And in December we were also able to sit with a group of about seven or eight individuals that have already begun thinking through how do we reach the Muslims that are here at our doorstep with the gospel. That's one of the areas that I will be involved in. And then the last area, continue teaching in Francophone Africa. When we left Senegal last year, we sat down, we had several conversations with our team leaders. Dan and Esther were their names. And one of the things that they told us was, Wayne and Hillary, we feel like you made a big impact here in Africa, here in Senegal. We feel like you adjusted, you learned how to live here. If you remember how the first year for us was in Senegal, we did not like living in Senegal our first year. But over a few years, God worked on us, and I don't think He changed Senegal, but I think He changed us. And our team leader said, you learned how to live here, and you were able to minister effectively. Please do not close the door on Africa. And so we are looking at being back in the States. Hillary's program will be 4 years, but we are very open to returning to Africa in 4 years. In fact, a couple weeks ago, after we had been in Iowa for several months, Mark said to Hillary, when are we moving back to Senegal? He's ready to be done with the U.S. and he's ready to go back to where he was born. And so we are very open to that. And one of the things that I spoke to my new boss about was I went to all this effort to learn French. I feel like there have been doors opened up for me to teach in West Africa. I'd love to keep doing that if possible. And so I will keep doing that. There are schools in Ivory Coast, Senegal, and Cameroon that I'm already aware of. And so what I would like to do is maybe one or two trips a year. Each trip would be 1 or 2 weeks. Travel to West Africa and be able to teach in some of these schools. I'm not going to point out where the countries are because I can't walk back there that fast. But I'm excited to be able to stay connected to theological education in France and be involved in that. And one thing that's great about this program is if you might be wondering, well, if Hillary's involved in Memphis Teacher Residency and you're going to travel to Africa, how in the world are you going to take care of the kids? And after looking high and low, we have found people who would be willing to volunteer and help out with the kids. And they're sitting right there, in case you're wondering. The grandparents are part of this strategy as well. And so we're thankful for that. So that's where we're going next. We're excited that we can look back and see how God used us in Senegal and to look at what God is calling us to next and to see very clearly how the experience we had in Senegal, God didn't waste it. It did not go as we had planned. I remember thinking that we would be there for 15 or 20 years and that the majority of my time would be teaching. It did not go as planned, but God used it, and God did some great things, and we can see very clearly how what's next, God is using that past experience in what He has called us to next. And I would like to close with one last verse there. Paul, in his letter to the Philippians, he thanks God for them because of their partnership in the gospel. And the church at Philippi was active in supporting Paul and praying for Paul. And it's interesting to me how Paul describes that as a genuine partnership in the gospel. He didn't view what the church at Philippi was doing as something separate than what he was doing, but they were partnering together. And I am very thankful for Shannon Hills Bible Chapel, and especially for, I grew up here. And so the group of believers here has had a big impact on my life in having a foundation from a very early age and knowing the importance of putting God first in my life. And so I thank you for your prayers. I ask that you continue to pray for Hillary, for myself, as we transition into new ministry areas, that we hope to be another part of seeing the gospel go out. And so I ask for your prayers for that and prayers for our kids as we are going to be making yet one more transition here in another month. So I thank you and ask for you to continue praying for us. Let me close our time in prayer. Father, I want to thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you that you care for us, love us, and that you guide us. I want to thank you for everyone here in the desire that is here to see you glorified. I ask that you glorify your name through our efforts. And I pray these things in your son's name. Amen.